Today's edition of the Daily Caller podcast is brought to you by Life Change Tea.
Why go to getthetea.com? Because this important news could change your life. Socrates made a statement saying that all disease starts in the gut. Take care of your gut, and well, the rest speaks for itself. Life Change Tea is a wonderful way to aid in your digestion. Brew it, steep it, drink it, and feel it go to work. We at Life Change Tea have been around for years helping people just like you feel better. Lots of testimonials and lots of happy people. Log on to getthetea.com. That's getthetea.com. Getthetea.com.
Alrighty, hello again everyone and welcome to it. It's the Daily Caller podcast for the 25th day of March 2020. Day 8, 9, something like that. I've lost track of isolation. I'm so alone. So alone. Yes. Yeah, it's tough to keep up with what the hell's going on, what day it is. And what, I know we got through the weekend, at least. And then it'll probably be extended. So be prepared to be disappointed. But I imagine the loosening of restrictions will begin soon just because life has to return. If government doesn't give the all clear, people are simply going to start taking the all clear. I'm Derek Hunter. I'm your host. Welcome to it. You can email me, Derek@dailycaller.com, blah, 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 all that good stuff. There has to be some things that they can bring back. Golf. They closed down golf courses in the state of Maryland. Now, I get it. They can't have people going in there and working, but of all the things, if you're talking about people who are going stir crazy, and thankfully it's kind of cold this week, so you don't really want to go golfing. But when it gets nice again, things that are outside that you're not, like if you go with two people, instead of sending out foursomes, you send out twosomes, and you're riding your own cart. You can still yell at each other and tell each other how much you suck from across the fairway from one rough to another. But it just seems like sooner or later they're going to have to try to return some normalcy. Not full normalcy, but some normalcy to life. And this is one of the things I talk with about to our guest today. Our guest is going to be John Gabriel, from the editor-in-chief from Ricochet. He lives out in Arizona. We'll get the perspective from Arizona. We'll get a heads up on what's going on out there on their Senate race, how the people are coping, and just John's perspective. It's a good time, good time. You'll enjoy it. But there's going to be, as people return to normal-ish, I think that the handshake is probably done, to be perfectly honest with you, unless somebody's going to just carry a complete pocket full of rubber gloves and then shake a hand, throw away the rubber glove. Everybody's going to turn into Michael Jackson and wear one rubber glove. Last night I went to the grocery store and it was 1:30 in the morning. And I go up there and it was a ghost town. There was a lot of produce. That was good to see. There was some meat, which was good to see. Last time I was there over the weekend, there was no meat whatsoever except ham. Not that ham, there's anything wrong with ham, and corned beef, and I bought a corned beef, I made another corned beef, but there was steaks, which was nice, and there were some chicken breasts. That was about it. Everything else picked over. So you have this situation where, as, oh, by the way, the paper towel and toilet paper aisle decimated, cheese, no cheese to be found, no eggs to be found, and for some reason, this is the second time in a row that I'd been there, and this was the case. Bread completely gone, but buns there. Okay, I get it. It's not ideal to eat a sandwich, but there were a lot of buns. Not like it was restocked type buns, but it was clearly people went for the bread first and then said, I'd rather go without bread than eat a bun. I don't get it. Seems like you could have some buns. Also, the hot dogs and the prepackaged lunch meat finally got decimated. So I guess people are wising up. Still panicking, it seems. Still buying everything in sight. There was milk, however. Limits on certain things. Two things of water. Two loaves of bread or two types of bread, whatever it is. But Everything else was still a free-for-all. Most things, on the grand scheme of things, were in stock to some extent. They had a limit on pasta. You could only buy four. And ironically, they had a limit on pasta sauce, tomato sauce, spaghetti sauce. You could only buy three. So good luck with that last plain bowl of noodles. Although, here's a pro tip for you if you're looking for a way to mix it up. You do your noodles, your spaghetti noodles, or whatever kind of noodle you got. Then you take some butter when they're hot and you've strained them, and you put it back into the pot so it's not in the strainer. And you throw some butter in there, and you mix it up, and you get it all coated with butter. And then you put that shredded Parmesan cheese that, you know, like, not shredded. Yeah, I guess it is shredded, just pulverized almost. Parmesan cheese up there. And you put that on there, and that's pretty good. That's not bad if you're looking for a way to mix it up. You can also take wide egg noodles or just egg noodles in general, boil them, drain them, throw in a can of, depending, use like half a bag, throw in a can of cream of mushroom soup and a can of tuna fish. And my mom called that tuna noodle all the time. And that's pretty good too. And those little mushrooms from the cream of mushroom soup are like a little pleasant surprise. So there's your cooking show. My Julia Child segment of the program is over today, or Gordon Ramsay, or whoever the hell yells at people, or whatever they do. We've got some clips to do. I'm not going to harp on the bill that's worming its way through Congress today, except I'm going to talk about what Nancy Pelosi tried to do, because she's disgusting. I do have some audio to play today before we get to the John Gabriel clip, and try and return to some semblance of normalcy, even though the only story, they did postpone the Olympics until next year, which is fine, I suppose. It's, you know, a lot of people, I would assume, are a little bit disappointed. They love the Olympics. I love the Olympics. It's great. Get a chance to root for your country. But Canada had already pulled out. Other countries were toying with pulling out. It just seems like a logistical mess this short a time period. By next year, hopefully, knock on wood, we should have a vaccine against this thing. So then we can get back to what it, nobody, everybody wants to be an Olympic champion. Nobody wants to be an Olympic champion by accident, by default. So I think that this is probably the best thing to go to know. And it puts as much warning as you can to the athletes. It gives them enough warning to say, okay, you're going to have to wait a year. So A, you can probably stop training and stop stressing about training and whether or not your training facility is open or closed, which most of them are closed. So you can take a rest and help self-quarantine yourself. And just one last thing looming on the horizon and hanging over our heads, because Summer Olympics were coming up pretty quick. Hopefully it'd be nice if, you know, by the time the Summer Olympics would have kicked off, we could all go, why did we postpone this? This is so stupid. We should have had it. But that's not the world we live in today, and that's the only world we get to live in. So hopefully we'll be looking back upon this as a bit of paranoia and have a laugh about it. We shall see. Also, just really quickly, I found this funny and a taste of the human condition. The Denver Post reports. Denver Mayor Michael Hancock changed course drastically Monday evening after announcing earlier in the day that liquor stores and recreational marijuana dispensaries would close across the city in an attempt to slow the spread of coronavirus. His office made the new announcement around 5 p.m. via Twitter, saying that liquor and marijuana stores, quote, with extreme physical distancing in place, will be exempt from the mandated citywide closure of non-essential businesses starting at 5 p.m. Tuesday and continuing through April 10th. The problem is the mayor was going to shut all of these businesses, and suddenly everybody goes, oh, crap, my stash is low, or my bar is unstocked, or whatever. So there was a mad rush to get in line to buy booze and weed. Again, though, I would just caution people. I get it if you just, you know, you're completely out and you want to have a couple of bottles of wine on hand, or a bottle of vodka or gin or whatever it is. I stopped by the store recently and bought myself one of those big industrial size things of Bombay Sapphire. It was like $40, but it'll last me 6 months. And I thought, well, you know what? If I want to have a gin and tonic on the weekends, I got to have the gin, because a gin and tonic with just tonic sucks. So I did that. The whole transaction was easy. I walked in the store, grabbed the bottle, walked up to the front, held it out while the lady who was scrubbing her hands with hand sanitizer at the time, scanned it with the gun. We never even came close to each other. I inserted my credit card. I didn't even have to hit credit. I didn't touch the pad at all. I didn't touch the machine at all. Just put my credit card in. It said approved. Pulled the thing out, said, you can keep the receipt. See you later. And walked out. If only all of life's transactions could be that simple. But I get it that you want to have something around the house. You got to kill the time. It'd be nice to kill some brain cells while you're at it, have a good laugh or relax, just sort of let off some steam at the end of the day. But if you got to rush out to buy weed, come on, man. In the words of Joe Biden, come on, man. You can't go a couple of weeks without weed that you're willing to stand in line with a whole bunch of people. I don't know. You're dealing with a lung disease, okay? That's essentially what coronavirus is. Is it really is a respiratory disease? You don't want to, I don't know, smoke a bunch of unfiltered weed? Smoking cigarettes is bad enough. It's bad. Don't smoke cigarettes. But to sit there and just go, there's no way I can get through. You're supposed to be conserving food, too. Marijuana isn't going to help you conserve food. Think about this stuff, people. Come on, man. I love Joe Biden. Poor Joe Biden. Let's start with Joe Biden, shall we? Because he's so desperately trying to seem relevant. He's trying, his whole campaign right now has been reduced to reminding people that he still exists, which is tough to do because he doesn't fully exist, at least in a mental capacity kind of way. So we have audio of him doing the rounds from his home studio that they built in a ramshackle, disheveled library. And at least he's wearing pants. At least I think he's wearing pants. But before we get to that, we do our pre-recorded interview commercial with our sponsor on Wednesday. So here it is.
All right. Joining me now on the phone is the proprietor of AncientLifeOil.com, where I get all of my CBD oil that I take every day and really helps me with those aches and pains. And it helps me sleep a lot. It's Ronnie McMullen. How are you doing, Ronnie?
I'm doing great. How you doing, Derek?
I am doing wonderfully, and I'm sleeping better, and I just feel so much better thanks to the CBD oil there that you have there. Tell us about what goes on in CBD oil, because you can't go into any convenience store or gas station or grocery store anymore without somebody selling CBD oil on the counter, behind the counter. There's a huge difference in quality and effect.
Well, huge. When you're talking about quality and effect, you're absolutely right. Because if you get the gas station brand, and I'm not trying to dog my competitors because that's not a great way to go. But on the same token, if it's not the good stuff, then it's not going to work. So then you're going to be one of those people who say, yeah, I tried CBD. It doesn't work. No, it really works. It works for inflammation. It works for anxiety. It works for all kinds of good stuff. They're finding so many clinical trials are being run right now. Pharmaceuticals are running with it. So it's really awesome. But here's where I want to go. If you want the good stuff, if you want the Ferrari, the Ancient Life Oil, okay, you go to AncientLifeOil.com and know that I just lowered my prices between 15 and 25%, and it's going to stay that way. And if you go to subscriptions, you can get even more money off if you just get it every month, because some people need this every month just for their body to hang out and be groovy. So AncientLifeOil.com and 15 to 25% off everything, and it's going to stay that way.
You try it once and you'll be a convert. Trust me on that. They got me. Ronnie McMullen, if you enter promo code Derek at checkout, you get free shipping on top of it all. You're doing the Lord's work out there. I want to thank you.
No, it's wonderful because I always have happy customers.
Don't forget to enter promo code Derek at checkout and click apply for free shipping on top of great savings.
Okay, love getthetea.com. And Ronnie McMullen, thanks to them. Joe Biden. I have less strong feelings. Well, maybe equally strong feelings about, because what I think he's doing is disgusting. He is pretending to be the shadow president, holding briefings. He claimed today that he wakes up and he gets an hour and a half briefing on the coronavirus, and then he gets an hour and a half briefing on the economy. So his first 3 hours of the day are consumed with briefings, which strikes me as a bit odd, because I think you could sum up the state, especially if you're doing it every single day, I think you could sum up the state of things in about 10 minutes on each one of those topics, right? Not a lot of major changes happening on a day-to-day basis on either one of those things. They're both kind of numbers games. So if you have a grasp of the general concept, it shouldn't take too long to explain it to you. Now, for Joe, you got to bust out the circle of paper and some crayons, and you got to explain to him slowly, deliberately, and probably three or four times exactly what the economy is, and go from there and just hope for the best. Coronavirus, I don't even know how you begin to explain to Joe Biden about the coronavirus, but that's what he claimed. So he made the rounds on TV, and he is just not there. He was on with Jake Tapper, and he coughed into his hand, and Jake Tapper lectured him about coughing into his hand, and he said, "You're right, I probably should, but I'm alone at home in my home," which is not the case. And by the way, you're an elderly dude who is coughing an awful lot lately. You might want to get tested. Just saying. But he was asked about the... I don't even know how to describe his answer, because it was so convoluted and so bizarre and so self-contradictory. He's talking about the cure for the economy, and when we find the cure, it's going to be worse. It's going to be terrible. Again, if you're sitting there and you're thinking, what the hell are you talking about, Derek? That's what Joe Biden said. So it's not me. I'm trying to summarize the ramblings of an incoherent geriatric who wants to be our next president. And keep in mind, this guy is, for all intents and purposes, the Democratic nominee. Now, there's a possibility that the Democrats will go, no, can't do this. We got to find some other option, and go with some other option. I think right now Democrats would trade 15 Joe Bidens for one Andrew Cuomo up in New York, for example. The Atlantic had a piece, which is kind of funny. It basically says, just all we need you to do, Joe Biden, is stay alive. All we need you to do, Joe Biden, just stay alive, which, again, sounds an awful lot like settling, you think? Or do you think that they're going to particularly get excited about President Joe Biden or candidate Joe Biden? There's no way in God's green earth they're going to get excited about a president or a candidate Joe Biden, but this is what the Democrats settled on. Tells you how bad the rest of the field was. So before we bother, I'm going to play this Biden audio clip, and you'll see why Democrats are just saying, just be alive, Joe Biden. That's all we can ask of from you at this point, because anything else is a bridge too far. Listen to what Joe says and see if you can make any sense of it.
Reassess the recommended period for keeping businesses shut and people at home. Are you at all concerned, as Trump said, that we cannot let the cure be worse than the problem itself?
We have to take care of the cure. That will make the problem worse no matter what. No matter what. We know what has to be done.
We have to take care of the cure. That will make things worse no matter what. The cure will make things... What in the hell is he talking about? Again, most people will make mistakes. All people will make mistakes in speaking. Most people will catch them. Joe Biden doesn't catch them. Joe Biden seems unaware of what's going on around him and what he is participating in as well. The Atlantic piece is written by Alex Wagner, who is used to be an MSNBC host. Now she's a contributor at The Atlantic, and she co-hosts that Showtime show, The Circus, which I watched for a little while, and then they brought her on board. And I was just like, really, you don't need another liberal. But they had to replace the sexual pervert that got booted from the show. Her piece is, "Stay Alive, Joe Biden." Subheadline, "Democrats need little from the frontrunner beyond his corporal presence." 2 days before South Carolina primary that would reverse his political fortunes and redirect the course of the Democratic nomination, Joe Biden's campaign for president announced a hastily planned event in McClellanville, South Carolina. The national campaign press was alerted that Biden would enter full battle mode at the stop, and the proverbial gloves were going to come off against ahead of the kill or be killed primary, and no one would want to miss this one. Yet, when the cameras and reporters arrived, all they found were a few folding chairs and an otherwise empty parking lot in front of a community health center. Joe Biden walked out, mumbled a few words about the improvements he wanted to make to Obamacare, then shuffled off alone. The sun was shining, the birds were chirping, and absolutely nothing had changed. That's Joe Biden. The voters seem to have coalesced around Biden for his past, who they've known him to be for the past four decades in American politics, rather than anything in his present. It's as if Joe Biden exists primarily as an idea rather than as an actual candidate. This is the best endorsement Joe Biden's gotten all week. The gist of it is, right now, Joe Biden, just stay alive. You've got the Democratic nomination. Democrats are going to vote for you. They don't care. They hate Trump that much. She hates Trump that much. Just stay alive, Joe Biden. Again, I guess you could put it on a bumper sticker, but I'm not sure you'd want to. This is the Democratic Party. Now, I think that there is a large contingent of the Democratic Party that, again, would love to see Joe Biden get out of the race. Just go, you know what? I've been watching this Cuomo guy, and I think he should be the nominee. Joe Biden or Bernie Sanders would throw an absolute fit. But the party, I think, right now would love to see someone like Andrew Cuomo up there. But Andrew Cuomo chose not to run. And you got to dance with the girl who brung you. And sadly, right now, that for the Democrats is Joe Biden, who goes on national TV and says things like, we've got to find the cure because the cure is worse than the disease. Yeah, okay, good luck with that. The liberal media is really going a little bit crazy again, or was going a little bit crazy yesterday, and they'll be going. The president's job approval rating has gone up in Gallup. It's up to 49%. He's getting marks as high as 60% for his handling of the coronavirus situation, which is why the left is now pushing to get the networks to stop carrying the daily coronavirus task force briefing. Because the president comes off too good to the American people. Oh, they all throw a hissy fit. They go absolutely crazy. But normal people look at it and go, he's on it. I'm glad that somebody is on this, considering how screwed up Democrats are. So it's nice that they want to stop that. Even Joe of Morning Joe tweeted that the media, it's dangerous to keep broadcasting Donald Trump. It's dangerous? Are you kidding me? But another thing, but the president said, I forgot to mention, the president said that he wants to start the economy back up. He wants to have this thing sort of not wrapped up, because it's not going to be wrapped up until there is a vaccine, which is underway. But, you know, hopefully, fingers crossed, it will work. But he wants to have this extreme staying at home, shutting down things done and out of place and back to normal by Easter, which is April 12th. That doesn't seem beyond the pale, but the media is portraying it as if it is something major, as if it, my God, we couldn't possibly. Kayla Tausche, T-A-U-S-C-H-E, she is the Washington correspondent for CNBC. Upon hearing the president say the following, quote, "I would love to have the country opened up and raring to go by Easter, April 12th. That's the quote. I would love to have the country opened up and raring to go by Easter. That's the full quote. She spun this as breaking Trump sets deadline for U.S. economy to reopen. That's not a deadline. That's wishful thinking. That's hope. There's a difference. Words have meaning, and if you don't understand that words have meaning, you should probably not be tweeting them. You should not be speaking them. But words do, in fact, have meaning. He hopes, he would love to have the country opened up by then. Is it going to happen? It's certainly not etched in stone. We don't know for sure what's going to happen. But it would be much better for the country and the world if it were to. But we need to work with Democrats. Republicans need to work with Democrats in order to get anything going. And that just doesn't seem possible at this point. When Nancy Pelosi parked her broom on Sunday and ran into the Senate to suicide bomb the deal that they had worked out to save the U.S. economy, she promised that she was going to write her own bill, and write her own bill she did. In less than 24 hours, she came out with a 1,400-page monster. It's weird, because it takes a little while to write legislation. This means that this was laying around. This is just a conglomeration of a whole bunch of liberal wet dreams crammed together under the guise of coronavirus relief. What is in this thing that Nancy Pelosi put forward? Every Democrat should have to answer for every single one of these things. In Nancy Pelosi's bill, $33.2 million for the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. What are they going to do with it? It's to build new facilities. What do they need new facilities for? Well, they just want them. How does that help with coronavirus? How does that make people whole while they're laid off and their companies are going under? It doesn't, but she doesn't really give a damn. Nancy Pelosi also put in $100 million for NASA and $100 million for construction and environmental compliance and restoration. Just throwing money around. And what I mean, $35 million for the Kennedy Center for the Performing Arts in Washington, D.C. for operations and maintenance. $35 million. How does that help? It doesn't. It's Christmas in liberal land. $90 million for an HIV program. If there is a need for $90 million for an HIV program, introduce a bill that by itself is $90 million for an HIV program. But nope, they're just going to include it in here because why not? $7 million for a specific D.C. charter school, Gallaudet University. Only one school is singled out. Very weird. Howard University, the historically black college, gets $23 million in Nancy Pelosi's coronavirus bill. The current endowment for Howard University, $647 million. Why do they need $23 million more of our dollars? Shall remain a mystery for the ages. $300 million for the corporation for public broadcasting. Yes, that's right. Families are worried about being able to pay for their next meal, but Big Bird shall eat well. $500 million, $500 million for something called the Institute of Museum and Library Services. What is that? I don't know. Why does it exist, and why would it ever get one penny of U.S. taxpayer dollars, let alone $500 million in the Democrats' plan to save the economy from coronavirus collapse? We'll never know. She tosses $1 million to the sergeant at arms and the doorkeeper in the Senate, because why not? I mean, you're throwing money around. $300 million in migration and refugee assistance. Yes, that's right. She also wants to extend all work visas because Democrats have priorities and none of them are you. None of them are the American people. She also wants to require the federal government to use minority banks and credit unions because why not? It's insane what they are doing. Feds are going to buy $300 million worth of food and then redistribute that. How do you think that's going to work out? This is your Democratic Party, ladies and gentlemen. This is their priority list. In the face of a crisis, this is what they come up with. it is evil, dare I say, to dangle this out, to prioritize your constituency. She wants to give more power to federal unions to negotiate with the federal government. Why? Whose side is she on? Does she even know anymore? So that's just a small taste, just a little dip in the well of what Democrats have prioritized over your financial stability, the country's financial stability. Keep that in mind, ladies and gentlemen. Keep that in mind now through November, not again in November, through November. Let that outrage motivate you. Okay, now let's go to our interview with the editor-in-chief of Ricochet, John Gabriel.
Okay, as we've been doing all week, and as best we can, we bring somebody else in from around the country, maybe even around the world. Technology is amazing. We could get somebody from around the world. We're just probably not going to because of time changes. But we're bringing somebody in to get their perspective, somebody whose brain is worthy of picking, somebody who, A, has one, first of all, which is an all-important ingredient when trying to pick a brain, and to see how the rest of the country is faring. This is no different. We're joined by John Gabriel. He is the editor-in-chief of Ricochet.com, which does carry this, along with, I don't know, 50, 60, 500,000 other podcasts. John, how are you doing out there? How are you faring? Have you resorted to cannibalism yet?
Not yet, but my dog is looking pretty good. I'm fattening him up in case things take a turn for the worse.
That's good. I got a couple of neighbors that with some marinade. I'm just saying they look gamey, right. But I think generally they could be cooked properly.
Well, I finished all the fish aquarium we had lying around, so I'm going to get hungry again soon. We're all out of bats in our neighborhood. So
yeah, you had to get rid of the fish so that you could smoke or consume or however the hell you consume aquarium cleaner. What in the hell? Let's start with that for a second, because that was a hell of a story. I saw the headline last night, and I'm thinking, well, this is tomorrow, so two nights ago. God, time changes just screw me up. I'm seeing there, and I see, oh, you know, somebody who took the drug that Trump recommended died. And I thought, oh, here we go. Because, you know, first of all, I used to work in health policy, and I know that drugs work differently on different people. Some people, so I'm allergic to aspirin, so anything could happen. But I thought, this is going to cause a problem. Then I made the mistake, or at least according to the journalist who wrote it, made the mistake of reading the piece and saw how little the headline actually compared to the text of the piece. Once you got past paragraph 4 or so, then they mentioned that they were apparently freebasing or whatever you do with aquarium cleaner or something, depending on which source you read, or something to get rid of fish parasites. In any event, it has a much higher, either way, you got issues and you should probably change the water. Either way, but it is a much higher concentration of something called chloroquine. I can't even remember.
Phosphate, I think, yeah.
That's right, phosphate, which is decidedly, now I'm no chemist, but I do know that hydrochloroquine and chloroquine don't have phosphate at the end of it.
Right. Right.
I also know that if I'm going to put salt on my steak and salt isn't available, but there's sodium pentothal or sodium chloride, they're not the same. They have very similar names. Salt is sodium, but you don't just say pass the duchy on the left-hand side and go to town with whatever close approximation of a chemical makeup that you can get your hands on. When you saw that story last night, what kind of reaction did you have?
The first thing I thought is, well, they'll blame it on Trump, which of course they did. Right. And then I thought, because the esteemed gentleman who ingested said aquarium cleaner is an Arizonan, and I live in the beautiful state of Arizona. And one thing, when you live out here, you kind of notice pretty quickly, Arizona man really gives Florida man a run for his money. So
really? Because that's legendary.
Yeah, yeah. It's pretty impressive. There was some time, a couple of years ago when it finally occurred to me that we could best Florida in this, is there was a headline that a jumbo truck rolled over during an ostrich race. And I think two drunk people were thrown out of the vehicle or something. I went, oh, that's pretty impressive, that one there.
That happens. I lost a grandma's way.
So yeah, you knew that. he would be jumped on, because everything he does is too much, too little, or both at the same time. Doesn't matter what he does. People are going to be dumb, and they're going to do stuff like this. I also recommend not only you shouldn't be guzzling fish tank cleaner, hull cleaner is probably out of the question, too. I saw the movie Heathers, and that creates unfortunate problems. So, yeah, once again, they're just spending all their time, instead of putting out useful information, this is what the media is there for. They could be doing nonstop, talking to doctors, disease specialists, officials from various agencies saying, hey, here's the best way to deal with this. But instead, it's just this juvenile dunking on Trump that they've been doing since 2015, and it's not helping anyone. People are just tuning out. Everybody would be glued to CNN if they would just tell the truth, but they aren't really interested in that, it appears.
Is it that they're not interested in it, or is it that that muscle has atrophied to the point that they simply know how to use it? You know, they're the guy who grew into the couch. You know,
right, guy right. I think
his family drops off Doritos, and that's it, and they just understand that it's Uncle Couch now.
Right. I think it has atrophied. They've kind of thrown out every tool in their toolbox, but you know, dunking on Trump and everything is a crisis. They've spent, you know what, 4 years saying non-crises were actual crises. Net neutrality was going to kill us all. The tax cut was going to kill 100,000 people, I think they said. All the Ukraine, Russia, all these things were the end of the republic. The walls are closing in. It's the beginning of the end. Now you have an actual crisis where you don't need to hype it, and they still try to hype it. It's like, you don't need to hype this. Just, it's bad, and why don't you just give us information? And like I said, they would just, like back in the old days, I think of my mom, like 20 years ago, who would just always have CNN on in the background as a voice talking, and people would be doing that today. Well, they aren't doing it because instead of giving useful information, they're talking to Anthony Scaramucci and Sean Penn about how Melania is a failure as a first lady or something. It's just like, nobody cares about this stuff, guys.
If nothing else. They have the capacity to do so much good. And this, look, it's all fun and games when we make fun of these people on Twitter four weeks ago, and for how horrible they are. But we really are paying the price for the death of journalism. I think it was suicide. I think it was autoerotic asphyxiation. I think that there's a joke there, but it's also true in that these people love themselves more than anything else, and that helped kill them, the self-love. And now we're paying the price. Where can you go to get the truth? You've got, you know, sunshine and rainbows on one network and death and more death on the other networks. And it's, normally you can find a happy medium, but when you're dealing with matters of life and death, especially when at a time there are so many more new consumers of news because of what's going on, you have people with wildly fantastical different views of the world and misinformation left and right. Let me ask you this, John, because out here we have our own share of people who are just like, this is fake. There's nothing going on. This is just a scam. They want to screw over Trump. They want more control. I'm not worried. I'm going to go out and lick everything in the grocery store. That kind of people. People think of Arizona as part of the place where, let's just think, say Ted Kaczynski would vacation there. He wanted to get away from that cabin, you know, get away from it all, the hectic life of the cabin in the middle of the woods in Montana, and then go to Arizona. There's a lot of, obviously there are major cities there, but there's a lot of places where there's nothing, survivalists. Are you hearing some of the local people with this ain't no big thing attitude?
I've heard a little of it, but not a ton. And I live in Maricopa County, which is the county that Phoenix is, and over half the population of the state lives in this county. It's a very large county. And so I'm in the suburbs, but, you know, it's pretty urbanized. And most people are pretty calm about it. And, yeah, there was panic buying, especially a couple of weeks ago. But I've been to the store a few times just to get a couple essentials. And everybody's chill. Everybody's relaxed. Everybody's extra polite, which is nice to see. But yeah, I definitely know in distance, smaller towns.
There's a lot of head nodding going on. Like, hey, right, how's it going? Right. Just get away. Get away.
Yeah, they aren't embracing you. They're smiling from a fair distance. But, Yeah, I think in more rural Arizona, there's a lot of people like that who are just like, hey, government, leave me alone. Maybe this is a trick. Maybe Jade Helm is coming through or something. But I haven't, in any contacts I had, people have just been soberly dealing with it, including our governor. He's Republican, Doug Ducey. And he's been giving daily updates on Twitter, sometimes hourly or half hourly, since about third week of January. So he's been on it, meeting with teachers and business leaders and health executives and immunologists and all sorts of people just every day, just keeping on top of it. And we've done restrictions. Both my kids are not in school. They're at home today. My wife's working from home, and she did that a few days, once or twice a week anyway. But most people are pretty calm about it. And I think, too, I have to be kind of charitable towards our friends in New York City or L.A. When you have people like living on top of each other, literally in New York City and San Francisco, it's going to be a much, you know, more pressing concern than me, who has a yard and can kind of, you know, I can go out and do some yard work. I just got in from doing some. I can get some fresh air. And it's definitely more of a challenge if you rely on public transportation to get you anywhere in a larger city. But most people are just kind of rolling with it and obeying what the government says for now. One of those things, though, I'm glad both Governor Cuomo and Trump are both indicating, you know, we can't do this forever. Because there are a lot of, we all know someone who runs a small business, and I'm a coffee fiend. So my wife's been going to a lot of local coffee shops to kind of support them, buy a little extra from them, local restaurants that we like. And those people are scared, and I totally empathize with them. You know, it's you can't keep doing this forever, especially for the little guy who just opened an espresso shop, you know, 2 months ago. And now he's like, right. Now what kind of a thing?
Now, if you, that guy, and that guy is the American dream, and, you know, right. He's not going to be a billionaire probably, but he's going to, you know, if he can make a living at it, that's enough. And that's enough for most people. But I'm curious your thoughts, because it's not going to be an all clear. There's not going to be an all clear until there's a vaccine. But when there is a, you can emerge from the bunker sort of thing, there might be an initial rush to go to that coffee shop, to go to the old restaurant and see how everybody's doing and glad to be back. There's also going to be a lot of hesitation of, yeah. Okay, it's still out there. It's just not as prevalent. Hopefully it will recede like the flu does in warmer weather and give us much more time and chance to recover. But there's going to be lasting damage. And your thoughts on the how long you think it will take to get everybody back into, or almost everybody back into the swing of things. Like I said, the restaurants will be packed the first night. It's free to go back. Oh, we're, thank God we can go back. And then there's probably going to be somebody getting sick. And then there's going to be other people who are like, you guys go first. You guys go out in the ocean. Right. I'll see if there are any sharks. And then maybe I'll wade in later. What do you see that process looking like? Because we need to get the economy kicking as quickly as possible. And I'm not sure people understand that it's not going to.
Yeah, it's going to be tough. And it'll depend on the person, obviously. Some people are champing at the bit already. I'm just like, well, we'll see how long it lasts. It is what it is. And I'm used to being a hermit anyway. So I'm fine right. Sitting at home, locked away. But it kind of, I keep drawing back to the 9/11 experience. I remember when they stopped all flights, and then the day they started them again, I was driving to work, and I was heading towards, just driving down the road. A skyscraper was up ahead of me, and I saw the first plane I had seen in a couple weeks landing at the Phoenix airport, and it flew behind the skyscraper, you know, miles and miles away from it. But right. I just did this wince, you know, just instantly. It's like, oh, airplane, building, bad. And there were trips that I was like, okay, we can fly again, but you know what? I'm just going to stay home and hug the kids. I don't need to go to this conference or that conference. So there is that hesitation there. I think there will be, though, and I think the stock market will lead the way. I think that pretty quickly, people are going to be going, wow, look at all these deals, and start buying like crazy. And that's going to just, you know, you and I probably don't have, you know, Bernie Sanders level wealth with her three houses and wondering which one to quarantine in. But people just see the stock market kicking up and you're like, okay, I think we're going to get through it. So it's going to take several months. And I think, too, it might actually help with just the common flu this next winter. We're a heck of a lot more cautious about touching our face, washing our hands. You know, I certainly have been. And those habits are hard to die. But I think once we see our friends doing it, and we really like convenience in America, and I think we'll get on board in a few months and pretty quickly. But yeah, it's going to be all hands to the tiller, though, because we have to right the ship. And this is a big blow to a lot of people out there.
Yeah, it really is. And yeah, I scrub up 4 or 5 times a day like I'm ready to go into surgery. It's amazing. And I haven't left the house. And like, I'm
right.
If it's already in the house, I'm screwed. You know, like, yeah. But I'm still scrubbing up just to get into that habit. So that could really impact next cold and flu season. Now, you talked about things getting back to normal, people ready for it. Part of that is going to have to be making people, well, allowing people to survive through this, not allowing, but enabling people to survive through this from the sense of government, because it wasn't bad management that caused a particular industry to go under. It was the government that caused the entire economy to essentially come to a grinding halt. So right now, Congress is debating, and who knows, maybe the Senate will get its act together, and by the time this airs on Wednesday, it will be a moot point. But the lessons from it will still be relevant. As we're watching what's happening in the United States Senate over the last few days, John, suddenly Democrats have united against every seeming concept that they had agreed to in the first place. Nancy Pelosi rode her broom back from San Francisco, parked it in the cloakroom of the United States Senate, and blew up the deal that they had. There is rank opportunism happening there, and rank hypocrisy. One of your members of the Senate, Kyrsten Sinema, is guilty of a little bit of hypocrisy. I know you wanted to mention that, so point it out, because it's a good point.
Right. She has really positioned herself, and I've praised her. I write for the local paper here, or main paper in Arizona, the Arizona Republic, and I'm an opinion columnist for them as well, and I've praised her. I think the only two articles that were focused on her were fairly positive in that I said she's a very shrewd operator politically. She's avoiding chasing the squad and is trying to brand herself as a maverick, which was very successful for John McCain. He had a lot of people.
Her history is one of being sort of a lefty, like a far left.
Far left. She joked early on when she was in the State House of Representatives, she joked and called herself a Prada socialist because she liked nice shoes. And so she has really moderated her public image. And that's something that I've kind of stressed to a lot of people. When push comes to shove, she's going to vote with the Democrats. But she likes this this veneer of, look, I work across the aisle. I have friends across the aisle. We can talk here. But I think she's a little worried because our governor here, Governor Doug Ducey, has been on this from the jump and has been very public about it and communicating a lot. And she started complaining about a week ago that he wasn't doing enough. And she usually avoids these partisan fights. But I think she might be worried when she's up for re-election, he might run against her. None of that is for sure, but I think that's probably her thinking, and she wants to damage him a bit. So she's been scolding him for a week straight on, you're not closing things fast enough. You're not shutting down enough restaurants. Why aren't you shutting down restaurants in these rural counties that have zero reported cases, they're very sparsely populated? And but instead, he's focusing, obviously, you know, different solutions for different areas. And she's been very strident about this and been praised by the press for it, of course, locally and nationally. And when push comes to shove, though, Sunday night, they have a bipartisan deal. I'm sure I have lots of problems with it. But hey, Democrats and Republicans hammered it out over several days. Well, she voted to block that along with the rest of the Democrats. And then she immediately pivoted back to lecturing Arizona state leaders, which include people of both parties, for not doing enough. And you have to call out this hypocrisy. It's like, look, you have one job. You aren't the governor. You aren't running what's going on in Arizona. How about getting relief for the people who are struggling here? And she has been a firm no, at least to date, as we record this. So you got to point out this hypocrisy because Democrats have got to take this seriously. This is not fake crisis like net neutrality. This is the real deal. This is when you put on the big boy pants and you make the tough decisions. And Democrats have handled this horribly. Even you've seen, and they've gone back and forth on it, but when you see liberal organs like Washington Post, New York Times, even consider a headline blaming them for the impasse, it means that they've really lost the public on this.
Well, they quickly redrafted that. They right. learned their lesson. The bat phone rang almost immediately. But it is amazing that the argument that they're trying to make is we need to help the people, not the companies. But I think at the end of this, at the end of the tunnel, you want a job waiting for you when you get back, not government dependency and potential poverty going forward. So protecting the companies as well, and in industries in some cases, is wildly important if you're going to return back to something close to what they are. And then I think is possibly what they oppose is something close to what they were, is they never particularly enjoyed the brand of capitalism. It's not pure capitalism, but the brand of capitalism that we have. So you have Nancy Pelosi come in and say this deal is too, it's too favorite the rich, it's too, it's the standard thing, it's every liberal's tramp stamp, I'm sure. Favors the rich, it's for corporations, blah 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 blah. And she comes up with her own monstrosity, and I swear it is about the fastest I've ever seen a more than 1,000-page piece of legislation cobbled together in less than 24 hours, which makes me think that maybe they'd been planning this for some time. Mm-hmm. And her version of the bill, which has very important things like $300 million or whatever it is for the Kennedy Center and things of that nature, is where are they finding, or where are they thinking there's a constituency for what they're doing? That's what I find most curious. It's where, who are they trying to appeal to with this?
Yeah, I think they're just trying to appeal to their big money donors and just assuming that, hey, we can sneak this in and no one will notice we're doing it. But people are going to notice. Everyone in the country is tuned into the situation right now. And by listening to Nancy Pelosi, the Democrats have put themselves over the barrel, just as they did when she pursued impeachment. She basically, to get her leadership position, she promised to the progressives, hey, I'll let you have a seat at the table. I'll let the squad help run things. And this is what you get. You know, they have too many people in their party that say, never let a crisis go to waste. And trying to fund, you know, all these crazy bailouts for her pet projects and not actually funnel money to the companies that the government ordered to be shut down. I don't think people are going to buy it. And the press can try to salvage her after the fact. But for all their complaining about Trump, he's actually there saying, hey, I'm going to sign this stuff. Send me a good bill. And there's a lot they can do that they can't agree on. Get that done. If Pelosi doesn't think it's enough, she runs the House. She can set up an additional bill to make sure that Kennedy Center gets its sweet $300 million as soon as she wants. Just send that over by itself.
That really is the case. Now, you guys out there in Arizona, was your primary was postponed, wasn't it? No, did it go off?
No, they went through with it. It was kind of a touch and base decision, but they went through with it. Biden won pretty easily here. And Trump, of course, won as well. I think he was unopposed. If there might not have been a primary, because there's no mood to get rid of him out here in Arizona. And I think what Democrats and Republicans should focus on, it's not about making hay with a situation to win a daily news cycle. People are going to, when they get into a voting booth in November, they're going to look back at how both parties handled this. It's not about winning a daily news cycle. It's about saying, okay, who is the calm and steady leader through this who took it seriously and didn't try to, pass the buck to their favorite lobbyists on these things. And I think Trump, to his credit, you know, and he was a little iffy at the start, but he's playing the long game. He says, look, the economy will take care of itself if we take care of the virus right now. Do that for a week or two, then we'll reassess. And I think that's all he really can do. He didn't create this virus. China did. And he's just reacting to it in the best way he knows how. And, he, you know, I think he and also Democrats, too, they're trying to win a news cycle when if they want to be serious about it, they better be looking in November, because they're going to get punished really badly. We saw what happened to Jeremy Corbyn in the UK, and I think this could be setting up to be a big slam on them this upcoming election if they promote this tax and spend nonsense they're trying to get through, or the woke terminology about not blaming China for a Chinese virus.
Yeah, first of all, let me apologize to our Chinese overlords for John's racism and noting the geographic birthplace of the coronavirus of unknown origin that could have come from anywhere. When you watching that unfold was one of the most surreal things I've ever seen, because every single person who was clutching their pearls over the accurate description of the location and how things like West Nile virus and viruses have often been named, they all had a nice set of fingerprints in fresh snow of them doing exactly the same. But the second Doug Collins, I think it was, Congressman Collins, repeated the Wuhan virus or China virus, I forget which it was, then suddenly they seem to have seen an opportunity. And they said, aha, we can claim racism, sexism. And then there suddenly everybody became woke to the plight of Asian Americans. They didn't right. seem to care too much about how they get into Harvard and how they're punished for trying to get into Harvard. But suddenly it was, well, there are attacks against Asians and bias instances, which is garbage. But there are no stories about those things. They're occasional anecdotes, but no real hard stories. Every square inch of the United States, almost, except for out where you live in the middle of the desert in Arizona, is covered by some form of surveillance. We see people mugged constantly on the streets of New York on various cameras. We haven't seen this massive uptick in anti-Asian assaults, mostly because you've got to get too close to people to assault them. But the mentality of people who said, well, that's racist, when in the bravado of people, I guess it would be the better word, of people who say that's racist to say that, why are you doing this, when they themselves have said it. Don Lemon has said it. It has been said to Don Lemon before a Republican dared repeat them back to themselves. I hope to God, to bring it back to the media just for a second, I hope to God this is something from which they can never recover, because they shouldn't be able to.
Yeah, and when an economy is teetering on the brink and people's health, they're worried about their parents and grandparents, this is not the time to give America a stern lecture about intersectionality. That's not the primary concern right now in the country. The primary concern is health and the economy. That's what people care about. And any politician who focuses on those two things will do very well. If people get running down rabbit holes into, false hate crimes, Jussie Smolletting this crisis, they're going to be in for a rude awakening next election time.
Arizona is an interesting state in that when people think of it, they think, oh, it's a Republican state. It's Barry Goldwater state, to a lesser degree, John McCain state. But John McCain was a Republican. Now you have a Democrat in the United States Senate who won pretty easily, pretty handily, relatively speaking. And you have another, her opponent ended up being appointed to the United States Senate. McSally is in trouble. Are we watching Arizona slowly turn purple at a minimum?
I think Arizona, a lot of people, yeah, especially the past 10-15 years, we've had a very strange period for Arizona of basically one party control until Kyrsten Sinema was elected. It was all Republican all the way. But in general, we've always been kind of a purplish state. We've had as many Democratic governors as Republican governors. I always say Arizona isn't conservative as much as it is contrarian. If you feel the big party bosses, either one, are trying to force a candidate on you, people are just like, oh, I'm going to vote for the other person then. You can't tell me what to do, is kind of the attitude. I think McSally's losing now, but people aren't paying attention to the Senate race right now. Mark Kelly, who's running against her, Gabby Gifford's husband, former astronaut, has a long record of being anti-gun, and Arizona is, I don't even think it's arguable, it's the most pro-gun state in the nation. Our state flag, we were ordered by Congress to submit a state flag, and we didn't feel like getting around to it, so we sent them the flag of our state rifle corps. That's our flag. So they are, we are very, we guard our liberties very jealously, and I think as we get closer to the elections, that's what a lot of it's going to be about. People don't want to be told what to do by Washington. They do not want an anti-Second Amendment, extreme anti-Second Amendment activists ruling over them and trying to take away their rights. So I think it's going to be difficult for them to win. Sally is not as politically savvy as someone like Kyrsten Sinema. That's why she lost. I think she needs to.
Let me ask you that in that sense is, did Sinema win or did McSally lose?
It was really a combination of both. Sinema, you would have thought she was a kind of a country club Republican. If you saw any of her ads, her mailers are nothing but seas of American flags and photos of veterans. That's how she ran. She did not run as Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, that's for sure. She just ran on very small issues. You know, you would have to need a magnifying glass to find out her party affiliation was Democrat. And McSally also ran into problems that she ran against Trump to win the primary and then ran towards Trump to win the general. And so nobody, the Trump fans and the Trump haters, didn't trust her. So now I think that's all water under the bridge. She actually has a record as a senator. So I think people know what they are getting with her. So I think it's going to be a much closer race. I'm seeing a lot of out-of-state Democrats saying, oh, it's pretty much over. It's like, no, nothing's over because nobody's really paying attention to the November elections right now. When it gets closer, I think the ads against Mark Kelly are going to be brutal.
Well, Kelly has a ton of money coming after him and ton of national favor because of his wife and the horrible thing that she went through out there. Does McSally have the personality to overcome that? Mark Kelly, for all of his crazy positions that I wildly disagree with, seems like an affable guy, and it shouldn't seem like that should matter, but it does.
If McSally wants to win, she's going to have to humanize herself a bit, because she's just, you know, she's a tough customer and Air Force fighter pilot, and she's just pretty brusque and tough. She's going to need to humanize herself a little bit, but I recommend she just focuses on issues, get a couple wedge issues, especially like Second Amendment rights. Some of the craziness the Democrats have done in the past and say, do you really want these guys to represent both Senate seats for Arizona? I don't think so. You need someone in the R column, kind of an appeal for that mixed party governance. And I think that will do very well. Mark Kelly is the most formidable candidate she could have gotten, and he does have a lot of money. So I think she really needs to focus on issue after issue after issue. And that doesn't mean running a purely negative campaign. Talk about her biography, because she was very weak on those issues when she ran against Sinema. People didn't know who the heck she was. And the vast majority of the state lives in the Phoenix area, and she's not from the Phoenix area. She's from Tucson, which is about, 100 or so miles south of us, but a completely different media market. So they knew her very well. People in the Phoenix area is like, who is this person I'm voting for? She's just a standard Republican. And I think she has a very compelling story to tell about her military record that is at least as impressive, if not more so, I think more so, than Mark Kelly does.
Now, her biography, McSally's biography, is incredibly impressive, but her charisma, I think she could use a little bit of steroids on that, or at least some aquarium cleaner. Aquarium cleaner. John, tell people what Ricochet.com is all about.
Well, Ricochet is a site started about 10 years ago now, as a site where you can post your own content, comment, and all the free content that we have, but only if you're a member, and the membership is cheap. It's like $4 a month or something like that. But we also, something we got into kind of before a lot of other people got into it, is podcasts. So we host all sorts of podcasts, about 50 or 60 podcasts, including this fine one as well. And just giving conservatives a voice and a platform to talk about the issues of the day, not worrying about censorship from advertisers and things like that, just letting people have their say and giving a voice to all those people stuck in their homes right now.
Non-traditional avenues of communication. It's social distancing on the internet through arguing in the comments section. John Gabriel, thank you for taking the time and coming out of your bunker, or going actually probably deeper into your bunker to talk to us.
I live in an old retired missile silo out here, so no one will find me.
There you go. All right. Thank you, John.
Thank you, sir.
The great John Gabriel of the wonderful website Ricochet, where you can find this podcast along with tons of others. Too many others, you ask me, but that's just me. Anyway, that is all the time we have. Thank you for listening. Stay inside. There's no reason to go out unless you need something. Then go get it really quickly and then go back home. Let's beat the crap out of this thing so we can get the economy rolling again. Get back to kicking some ass, huh? We're sitting still and we're still kicking ass. Think of the ass we're going to kick when we get out. Thank you. You can email me, Derek@dailycaller.com, so on and so forth, et cetera, blah, blah, blah. Hey, it's more coherent than anything Joe Biden says. See you tomorrow.
We have to take care of the cure. That will make the problem worse no matter what. No matter what.